Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And with me as always is Tony Kerr.
Hey.
Tony, we are once again quite literally on the beach.
Back on the beach.
That's right. Where are we this time? Slightly less strenuous to get here. Last week we were on Petitpur, which is a beach at the bottom of nearly 400 steps. This time we're about 10 yards from the car park.
Yeah, a bit more straightforward, hey? Yeah, we're in the sort of northeast tip of the island. Well, I said the island of Guernsey, if you hadn't listened to this before. Looking out over towards some of the other islands, Herm, Jettu, Sark in the distance.
It's a beautiful view, actually, isn't it?
We can see
most of the other Channel Islands. Yeah, as you say, we're here at Bordeaux, not in France, but Bordeaux in Guernsey. And yeah, we can see, well, how many is that? Four islands? I can see Herm, Jettu, Sark and Jersey away in the distance behind there. No one wants to see Jersey, so luckily we can only see a little bit of it. Alderney's over the other way somewhere, but I can't see that at the moment. But yeah, it's a beautiful spot, beautiful day here. A few clouds around, but a bit of blue sky, a kind of duck egg blue sky peeking through. I'm trying to paint a picture here, Tane. You were saying last time that we should just completely rebrand this as just the Beach Cricket Pod.
I think so. I think it's the natural direction that we're going in at the moment.
You certainly seem much more enthusiastic about the idea of doing these since we started doing them on the beach.
You actually came to
me and said, "Shall we do a podcast this weekend?"
Yeah, I mean, well, when you think back to doing them in the in my spare bedroom / cupboard with boxer shorts and stuff strewn all over the place, sweating in the heat of it. This is just much more palatable. Yeah, I mean, actually, it's just a perfect studio, really, all round.
I should say, and apologies to regular listeners who have heard me say this several times, but for anyone sort of wondering, you know, where the social distancing is here, we are, of course, as we've made very clear, in Guernsey and the Channel Islands, which is, to all intents and purposes, COVID-free at the moment. What are we closing in on? 100 days with no new case. Last new case was in April. So we're in an incredibly fortunate situation here with life back to normal, no requirement for social distancing at all, which is why we're able to get together and do these. Hopefully listeners are enjoying that and don't feel that we're sort of rubbing it in. I know that London correspondent Gordon McRae texted us after listening to the last show and just said doing it on Petitpur was a bit on the nose. I think it's a bit of a kick in the teeth for him as a Guernsey boy in London at the moment. Yeah, although I guess, you know, obviously we're trying not to become too complacent here in our bubble, and it is a question, isn't it? It presumably can't last forever. Something's going to have to change because we're going to have to open the borders at some point. So it's becoming a bit of a contentious issue trying to work that out. But certainly enjoying it while it lasts. I guess with things getting tricky again, might be an understatement in the UK, it's just becoming ever more complicated.
Yeah. Glad that we're not making the decisions. I don't know, it's weird. I mean, I've heard there's been some noises of, you know, people saying that that's what England should do, should just bubble and... Well, that's probably what they should have done sort of 5 months ago, really. But yeah, who knows?
What closed the borders. Yeah, and yeah, it's a very difficult situation for lots of reasons. I suppose, yeah, I'd say hopefully we're not sort of rubbing this in for listeners. But, you know, what I hope that it's that Guernsey can kind of offer the UK rays of hope, specifically in the sense that, like, there's a lot of chat now about, you know, the new normal and whether things will ever fully go back to normal. Even when the virus is gone, will people's confidence about gatherings and things have gone? And what I would say is that in the midst of lockdown here, that was being talked about. But it's really quite remarkable how quickly things snap back to normal. Like the first couple of days, I think people were a bit like, oh, this is weird, you know, being close together or going into shops and restaurants with no social distancing. But pretty much immediately, everyone got over that, went back to normal. And I've heard a few people say to me recently, oh, it feels like a very long time ago.
Well, yeah, it really does. I mean, it feels like a distant memory. But yeah, you're right. Things really, certainly on the surface here in the island, do not seem any different to how they were
last summer. Yeah. Which, you know, our lockdown was a few months. The one in the UK and elsewhere might be much longer than that. So maybe it'll be different. But I do think if people are desperate for a return to normality, I think that can potentially offer a ray of hope that it will happen. And it will probably happen quite quickly once things are under control.
I do think as well, oh yeah, we've probably talked about some cricket at some point. I do think as well, there's an element like people, like there's definitely some positive kind of things that we can take from, I think, the experience of maybe like taking the foot off the gas slightly and not, you know, all the stuff that people talked about positively from the lockdown thing, which are, you know, obviously is probably outweighed by the negatives, but yeah, when people sort of said, well, this is, you know, it'll never be the same. This, people won't go back to what they were doing before. But really, people just do revert to the things that are just the easiest or that appeal to them or that they want to do, don't they? And that is drive a car or whatever. I know, you know, there's things that we could do to move in the right direction on certain issues and maybe, like, well, we're going massively off piece here, you know, like climate change, you know, maybe that there might be some kind of, what's the word, like takeaway from the whole pandemic experience in terms of like, yeah, how you tackle big issues, which you could argue lots of countries haven't done very well anyway. But yeah, but people just kind of revert to what they like doing. So
yeah, in some ways, like that's why society is the way it is.
Exactly.
Because people are lazy and sociable and, you know, and all those things that mean, yeah, that it really has gone back to normal here incredibly quickly. So yes, we're sort of broadcasting in a way from the other side of the pandemic, so hopefully that can offer some encouragement to anyone who is finding things tough at the moment, especially with the way things have developed in the last week or so. And our thoughts, yeah, very much with people who are in a much more difficult situation around the world. Well, anyway, as you say, Tim, we should probably talk about some cricket. We've got lots to discuss today because there's a hell of a lot of cricket going on. It's really coming thick and fast, isn't it? We need to talk about the end of England's series with the West Indies and look ahead to the series with Pakistan as well. There's some ODIs too, ODI series against Ireland. Have you seen any of those, Tim?
So yeah, I watched a bit of yesterday's ODI, kind of in and around to the FA Cup final, and yeah, saw a bit of the other one as well.
In and around.
Is that the right expression? In, around, over, alongside. Yeah, as you say, it's actually absurd how much cricket there is kind of going on now. England, you know, it's slightly bonkers how quickly they just reverted to playing these ODIs, and obviously like there's a fairly separate group of players, and you know they were having practice matches, weren't they, during the tests over the last couple of weeks. But you know, that county cricket as well, the Bob Willis Trophy started up, hasn't it? So it's all go.
Yeah, I enjoyed those couple of ODIs. I would say, you know, we talked about how the test matches felt much more normal than I was expecting them to. The ODIs to me did feel a little bit more flat. It may just be because, well, I was going to say because particularly the first game felt flat because it wasn't a very good game, was it? It was very one-sided. Second game, when it got, you know, when it got interesting at the end when England were losing wickets, felt more exciting. But you know, they did, to me, they felt a bit more like a warm-up or a practice match, which is kind of what I thought the tests would feel like. But nice to see David Willey taking some wickets. He got 5 wickets in that first game, didn't he? And obviously, you know, that's a good story because he was it was a very kind of last-minute exclusion from England's World Cup squad last year. He was the one to make way when Jofra Archer came in, which was, you know, obviously incredibly disappointing for him, having been a fairly key part of the squad for 4 years before that. So he probably thought his England career was over. So nice for him to come back and have that opportunity and get some wickets. But anyway, that's enough on the ODIs. Let's talk about the Test cricket, because England's Test series with the West Indies has come to an end after a bad start when they lost the first Test in Southampton. England will be very pleased and perhaps relieved that they managed to turn things around, winning both games at Old Trafford, including the decider, to take the series 2-1. West Indies again won the toss, and again Jason Holder put England into bat, which was a curious decision. England had a tricky start, but an excellent partnership on the first evening between Ollie Pope, who made 91, and Joss Butler, 67, got them up to 369 all out. That wasn't the whole story. There was a collapse in there as well on the second morning. But then Stuart Broad with a remarkable 62 off 45 balls, a quite uncharacteristically good innings from Stuart Broad, meant that they got a pretty decent total. It looked even more decent when West Indies were bowled out for 197, with Broad taking 6 for 31. They avoided the follow-on, but they're a long way behind. England motored along to 226 for 2 declared in their second innings. I say motored along, it was pretty slow progress from Burns and Sibley, but then Root came in and hit 68 from 56 balls to set West Indies an impossible target. And they were skittled out, really, in the second innings for 129. There was an entire day lost to rain in there, so there was a question about maybe they could survive on the final day. It was an opportunity for them to get away with the draw, but it wasn't to be. Broad with more wickets, 4 for 36, and Chris Wokes, 5 for 50, gave England the victory by 269 runs. So not really a very close game in the end. And after two very good test matches, this one wasn't so much. It wasn't as competitive, but a competitive series overall. Now, after England lost that first test in Southampton, I was wavering. I had predicted England to win 2-1. I changed my prediction to West Indies to win 2-1. You stuck to your guns. You said that, you know, that England would turn things around. You were adamant that they were going to turn the ship around and win the series 2-1. So I imagine you're probably feeling pretty pleased with yourself.
Yeah. Well, you flip-flopped around like some sort of like wet fish in a boat, if that's the right expression.
More flip-flops than Bournemouth Beach.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, it sort of petered out a bit for the West Indies, didn't it? After, as you say, after such a bright start. But I don't know whether it was based on a huge amount of knowledge or intuition. But yeah, you just felt like England were going to be the stronger side going into the series. And West Indies, yeah, didn't quite have enough with the bat as it kind of looked on paper. No one really put their hand up in a way that sort of elevated them beyond perhaps what we thought they were sort of going into the series, which is probably a bit of a shame.
Yeah, but then they were really good in the first game, weren't they? And, you know, perhaps took a few people by surprise there. I mean, what do you think? You kind of touched on it there, but how do you explain this? Like, to what extent do we just need to give England credit for this turnaround, or is it more that West Indies kind of ran out of steam? If you're writing a undergraduate essay about this, to what extent?
Bit of both. It's the classic, yeah. Bit of both. Look, there's no shame. There's no shame in the West Indies. In the way things panned out. Obviously, like, I'm sure they'll be disappointed not to have kind of built on that bright start. But when we looked at England's bowling lineup ahead of the series, and it looked, you know, ridiculously strong, and too much for the West Indies, and you know, credit to England, and particularly, you know, we spoke about, obviously, you know, Stuart Broad now is sort of mad at the moment, having been obviously left out in that first test and came back, and you know, it was all about him, really.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to Broad and his exploits and his 500 wickets and all that. I mean, yeah, he's, as you say, I think in the end their bowling attack too strong, and that, you know, we knew before the series they're kind of spoiled for choice in the bowling. I think they ended up sort of fumbling their way towards their best attack in the end, although it's not an attack they can really play all the time, because they played four frontline fast bowlers because Stokes was injured. They left out a batsman. I mean, that's not really a plausible option most of the time, is it? But it did mean they can include Wokes and Archer as well as Broad and Anderson. You know, it's a nice problem to have, but it is a problem to work out what that best attack is going forward. But it's probably going to be the case that it will be depending on the pitch and the conditions and form and fitness and all that. And they've just got a lot of options now, which is exciting as an England fan.
As we said at the top as well, you know, who knows what the calendar is going to look like over the next kind of 12 to 18 months. But certainly in the short term, obviously, they've got another batch of test matches coming thick and fast. So it's a good problem to have going into those.
Good to be able to rotate. I mean, as for West Indies, you know, we said last time, I think one of their problems here is although they have got a really exciting first choice 11, they just don't have the depth, especially in the bowling, but actually in the batting as well, in the sense that they perhaps don't even have the depth for first choice 6 in the batting, but in the bowling they've got that incredibly strong and exciting first choice attack. But beyond that, you feel they just didn't necessarily have, in the way that England have, they didn't have those guys to bring in to rotate. And you know, Shannon Gabriel was just absolutely knackered playing all three tests in a couple of weeks. I just think that was too much for him. And then, yeah, you look at the batting and it is just a little bit lightweight, isn't it? And they know that. You can see they know that because Jason Holder won the toss twice and both times put England in, because I think he just didn't trust his batsmen, not because that was the best thing to do based on the conditions, and it was the wrong decision, but he just, yeah, didn't have faith in his batsmen to take advantage. I mean, they've got a few batsmen with a lot of talent, haven't they, but who are inexperienced and only really showing glimpses at the moment. You know, your Blackwoods and your John Campbells. I mean, John Campbell's never going to get a 50. I think in this series and the one in the Caribbean last year, he's got to sort of 25 or 30 almost every time he's
gone in.
And
looks great doing it.
Looks absolutely brilliant and has never got a 50. But then they've also got a handful of guys who have made a mark in Test cricket, but just for whatever reason are lacking a bit of form and confidence at the moment. You know, Brathwaite and Hope and Shane Darroch. I mean, Shane Darroch took quite a lot of stick in this test. I felt a bit bad for him. You know, he ended up batting at 8, batting below Holder, and then because of Night and Watchman, he ended up coming in at number 9. And, you know, his confidence looked a bit shot, didn't it? He was really struggling against the short ball. I think he's going to be a little bit traumatised by that barrage he got from Jofra Archer. But it's surprising in a way, because he's actually been one of their most prolific batsmen over the last few years, I think, between tours of England. So in the 3 years from the end of the last tour to the beginning of this one, he averaged 36, which doesn't sound amazing, but for a wicketkeeper batsman and for the West Indies, I mean, that's actually one of the best averages for any West Indian batsman in that period. Scored 100 against England in the Caribbean last year, so he obviously finds it difficult batting in England, but as do a lot of his teammates. But in fairness, most international batsmen do find it difficult in England. We've even seen Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, not last time, but the time before, have their problems. Yeah, it is very difficult to bat in England. So to some extent, you can have some sympathy. And also before the series, we were saying, do we need to be giving out free passes on this with people, you know, with players not having played any cricket at all, any actual cricket, you know, and spent any time in the middle for months. So, yeah, is it perhaps, are we getting too kind of bogged down in the weeds talking about Shane Darroch's technique against the short ball, or what do you think?
Yeah, I know, I think so for sure. I mean, you know, and as we said, they're coming up against some of the best exponents of English conditions, of bowling in English conditions that there ever have been. So, I don't know, I do think it's tough to be too harsh on them. Clearly, there are issues, though, that existed before they came to England for this tour and they leave with as well. And as you say, like someone like, you know, Hope is massively under delivering. But yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it should be too damning off the back of this series. I think the fact, you know, I thought it was going to be 3-0 going into it. The fact that we did get, for the most part, a competitive series. Yeah, it sort of fell away at the end for West Indies. But, you know, I think that's a pretty decent return.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to give it some context. You know, that, although it really wasn't a long time ago, that first test win feels a little bit of a long time ago because of the way the next two panned out. But they did still win a game here, which in the context of the last 20 years of West Indies tours is an achievement. I mean, that might sound a little bit kind of patronising, but it is. And they won a test last time as well. It's now two series in England in a row where it's gone to a decider. Not that many teams do that. And compared to how they performed over the preceding, you know, 17 years, they hadn't won a test in England before 2017 since 2000. So, you know, I do think it's encouraging. There's definitely some progress being made, and that has to be exciting for world cricket, that they are becoming a competitive team, a team that can win test matches in England. They've obviously got a lot to do elsewhere. They do seem to have more success against England than most teams, but there's definitely, they're also, the other aspects of it as well is that they are an exciting team to watch. They're kind of a box office team with that bowling attack, and people like Blackwood and Campbell, you know, they're the sort of cliche of, you know, clearing the bars. Well, that wasn't really an issue in this in this environment, but it is like appointment viewing when John Campbell comes in. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, exactly. And you know, we spoke about it ahead of the series. You know, clearly the circumstances of it, you know, not massively conducive to for West Indies to put out their best lineup, and you know, they obviously left a few players back in the Caribbean. Yeah, I think we should just enjoy it and kind of move on. But you know, there's been a lot of chat.
Just want to go for a swim, don't you?
There's been a fair amount of chat, hasn't there, this week about the kind of the relative sort of well not relative the massive kind of mismatch in resource between, you know, between cricket's kind of nations now, and obviously England are just a cricket kind of juggernaut, and you know that
financially
resource wise in terms of the player development, you know, the fact that at the same time as the test match we got a whole nother batch of players who are world class in their own right preparing for an ODI series against Ireland, who themselves have been kind of massively somewhat screwed over, haven't they, or be very unlucky in many respects in the last few years. So you kind of can't be too surprised when an England beats West Indies and Ireland.
Yeah, it's not a fair fight, really,
no.
Is it? And yeah, there's an element of like, you know, England kind of high-fiving and, well, they're not high-fiving, are they? But you know, sort of metaphorically, everyone slapping each other on the back for that win. It's like, well, yeah, that's sort of the bare minimum, isn't it, when you consider the resources. But that, I mean, that's a wider thing across sport, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
like Team GB winning all those gold medals in the last few Olympics, the whole country goes absolutely bananas about that. But really, you know, when a British athlete, when a British canoeer defeats like the, I don't know, like, yeah, I can't think of the country. The Slovakian opponent. It's like, well, yeah, you've talked about it before, it's kind of like financial doping. Like, they just have such an advantage coming into it. It's not really fair.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know what you do about that.
I don't know what the figures are, but I wouldn't be surprised if like GB modern pentathlon is better funded than West Indies cricket. Probably is.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah.
It's easy to be probably a little bit smug when...
Definitely. And I'm guilty of that. Like, some of my favourite ever memories of watching sport are like London 2012. But again, you consider the amount of money that was put into that. Like, of course they won all those medals. It would have been pretty scandalous if they hadn't, in a sense.
I think you mentioned canoeing. There's like the story that came out a year or two ago about the culture of fear within British canoeing is just like one of the most absurd, I've probably mentioned this on the pod already, but one of the most absurd kind of concepts, I think. That's the, like, British sport jumping the shark,
yeah,
for sure.
Kind of through the looking glass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I know what you mean. Well, so actually, on this, a lot of people have made the point, and it's a point that really needs to be made, and it's one that I want to make as well, that, you know, in a sense, as I say, getting bogged down in talking about what happened on the field is sort of missing the point, and we just need to really be incredibly grateful to West Indies that they came, like, to the administrators and the backroom people who, like, made it happen, and then to the players for volunteering to come and putting themselves in that difficult situation and bubbling for so long. You know, it's a tough thing to do, and to actually just come over and play. And, you know, all right, yeah, they're getting paid and whatever, not as much as England are getting paid, but you know, we just need to be grateful to all concerned that they came and played. But yeah, and England cricket, the ECB, have said that we're so grateful to West Indies that you came and played. But the question is, will that gratitude extend to actually doing anything, like giving them some money? And you've seen Jason Holder, I don't know if you saw his quote coming out and saying, sort of saying like, yeah, all right, that's nice, but like, maybe why don't you come and now play a series in the Caribbean later this year in exchange? Because he's saying, you know, an England tour is really the only way that the West Indies make money. Now, they won't make as much. It's not as big a deal for the economy if there aren't British tourists coming as well, which there presumably wouldn't be. Or certainly not in those kind of numbers, but for TV rights and all of that, it's a huge thing when England goes to the Caribbean in a way that it isn't when New Zealand goes to the Caribbean. So Jason Holder's like, yeah, can we, you know, maybe you could come over and play another series, and the ECB at the moment are being very silent on that point. Now, it's obviously not as straightforward as there's lots of other considerations, but
yeah,
it is, in a way, I can see why it must be, it's slightly galling to hear people from the ECB, you know, just saying thank you so much for coming, when actually they're not really getting a lot in return for that other than those words.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know, hopefully, if there's one thing that the kind of whole situation can do, is that is to make people think a little bit less selfishly. Because yeah, certainly, you know, over the last few years and a decade or whatever, you know, the way that the pie, international cricket's pie, is divided up is just, it's not in the spirit of you know, improving the world game, is it? So, you know, I completely agree that those at the ECB with the power to make that stuff happen should be looking pretty closely at it and doing something more constructive.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing as well is that it ought to actually be in their self-interest too. Like, it's good for English cricket if West Indies cricket is strong and Sri Lankan cricket is strong and Pakistan cricket is strong, etc. You know, surely it's much better for England to have competitive opponents, that it's much more of a draw, West Indies Tour of England, if you know it's going to be a really exciting series. Like, surely that's better for selling tickets and TV rights and sponsorship and all of that than if it's going to be hugely one-sided. So arguably they're thinking too short-term in not giving, you know, West Indies and co a bigger share of the pie to help develop the game. You know, maybe they're thinking, well, international cricket has no future, but even then you want players developing in other parts of the world, don't you, if you want franchise leagues.
Well, that's
and stuff
it. Yeah, you do wonder whether how much of all of this is kind of Test cricket's not going to go anywhere, and the Ashes is always going to be huge, and England will always play Test cricket. But you wonder whether these nations are just kind of gearing themselves towards capitalizing on a domestic franchise tournament in a way that would probably bring in more money anyway. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Let's just move on and play some Wibova. we'll talk about Broad in a second, but just one very final thing on West Indies, because we haven't talked about Rakeem Cornwall. very watchable aspect of this test was the introduction of Cornwall. What did you make of his involvement? For anyone who didn't see the game, just sort of noteworthy inclusion. He's quite a voluminous fellow. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's a big chap, isn't he?
Yeah, big unit.
I mean, yeah, he's just an instant kind of... instant. You know, he's been on the radar for a while, hasn't he? But, just a cult hero, in the making.
It's so iconic. Like, that image of him with the two caps on, standing at slip. It's quite a picture.
I mean, he didn't take any wickets, did he? What did he finish with? No wickets for... Yeah, none for 164 from 46 overs.
Yeah.
But, I mean, hey... Early days. I like the way he bowls. I like the way he kind of just sort of hustles in, and he's got a nice action.
Well, he doesn't hustle in at all. He just like strolls in and turns his arm over.
Hustle in is not the right word, but he kind of just, he sort of wanders up. But he's got, he's got quite a fast arm.
Yeah.
And he gets it down quite nicely.
And there must be something to him as well. But I felt a bit bad for him that, a lot of English pundits, etc., were just kind of instantly writing him off. I mean, as you say, he did not have a blinder. But he's got an incredible bowling average in first-class cricket. He took 7 wickets on Test debut, albeit against Afghanistan, but then they're very good players of spin. You know, he must have a bit about him. A Test match in England on a pitch that didn't really do very much, probably not the best place to make his debut. But I just thought it was great. I mean, I hope it doesn't sound kind of like, I'm not at all making fun of him or being patronising or whatever. I just think it's something I really love about cricket, that it can... accommodate all these different body shapes. Like, you've got Rakeem Cornwall, James Taylor and Mohammed Irfan all playing the same sport at elite level, and I love that. And that's not necessarily something you see, certainly not in all sports, can't be in many sports. You know, basketball's obviously an obvious example, but even, well, and rugby, but even like football and tennis, they're like, tennis is tends towards players who are tall and can do that serve. There are exceptions, but you're not going to get someone like Rakeem Cornwall playing tennis football at the elite level, are you? And, maybe if you're not a cricket fan, you turn it on and see Rakeem Cornwall and you think, this is ridiculous that someone like that, is playing professional sport. But I think that's great.
No, I agree. And as you say, like his ability, he's proved his ability to a certain level, hasn't he, already? So, good for him.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just turning to England then, I mean, they pulled it off, turned things around after a bad start to the series. How impressive did you think they were in the end?
Yeah, reasonably. No complaints, certainly. You know, well, it wasn't perfect as a series, was it? But yeah, we saw some things that will give, you know, people a bit of confidence going forward. You know, certainly in the batting, you know, Burns and Sibley look kind of bedded into that team now. Sibley made a century, didn't he? Yeah, there are some other question marks there, but you know, that's certainly a positive. Butler, you know, making a few runs in a difficult situation is a positive, and he's probably bought himself a bit more time. Not that I thought necessarily we should be too judgmental going into it, you know, about him specifically, but you know, that was reasonably impressive. And the you know, as we said before, the bowling lineup, you know, not everyone, you know, played perhaps to their full potential, and overshadowed in a good way by Broad in the end. So yeah, no, I think yeah, pick up, move on.
get the Wibober out, move on. Yeah, well, just quickly on Butler, that in a way that what was frustrating, although it was nice to see him score some runs, what was frustrating about that was kind of exactly the wrong kind of score. If he'd got 30 or 40, that probably wouldn't have been enough. If he got 100, big 100, you know, it'd be like, well, yeah, he's definitely locked his place down. But with 60 odd, it's like, yeah, you can't drop him now, but actually it's not really enough to prove anything, do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, the fact that this Pakistan series is coming straight off, you know, off the back of it, you know, perhaps we'll know a little bit more in 2 weeks' time when it's been like six tests and four more ODIs.
Yeah. Well, we need to talk about Broad then. It's a remarkable couple of tests for him. As I said, he scored some runs as well, don't forget. That was actually England's third fastest 50 in Test cricket, which is quite bonkers, really, when you think about it. He bowled 60 overs in this series and took 16 wickets, an average of 10. And in the process, I don't know if you're aware of this, went past the 500 mark in Test cricket, all of which makes the fact that he was left out for the first game look like a slightly strange decision. And you have to wonder who would have made that decision. You know, you have to wonder what kind of absolute f***ing moron would have wanted that to be the decision that they made.
Well, you say that, I say it's good man management, isn't it? Because, you know, maybe he wouldn't have taken all those wickets had he played in the first test. He might have been a bit, you know, a bit complacent. So, you know, definitely got the best out of him in the end.
Well done.
So, yeah, cheers.
So what you're saying is it's because of you that he took all those wickets.
Absolutely, yeah. No, look, yeah, he bowled magnificently, didn't he? And it was a pretty impressive, to say the least, response to being left out. You know, it's easy for us. We talk flippantly, don't we, about players coming in, going out, being dropped, being cancelled, or whatever. It must have been a really tough thing to have to sit there and watch, having been, as we said earlier in the series, you know he's been invited to all the parties for how many years, and suddenly, you know, he was said, you know, not today, Stuart. Not tonight, Stuart. So, I think it's a real, you know, he had already achieved a huge amount, yeah, as a cricketer and as a person, but he's gone up in my estimation for sure off the back of this.
I think some people that's what some people got annoyed with him for, with those comments that he made after the first game, that they didn't like the sense of entitlement that he appeared to have when he said something like, you know, I felt that shirt was mine. Now, I don't have a problem with that, but just you saying, yeah, that it must have been tough for him having been a part of the team for so long. Well, some people would say, well, yeah, but he doesn't own the spot. And, you know, there has been a feeling at times that it can be harder to get out of the England team than into it. Do you know what I mean? So,
But then, to, you know, obviously it was the perfect riposte to come back and take 16 wickets in two tests. Yeah, hugely impressive. Well, I mean, the fact that he's gone to 500 test wickets as well is clearly an immense achievement, and obviously joins a very small club. You know, clearly for him and Anderson, you know, they've had opportunities both through by being England players in this era and, you know, through the longevity to get to that mark. You know, I don't think it's that you might not put both in the top seven fast bowlers of all time.
Top seven, yeah.
they might not be far off for some others. I don't know. A debate to be had there, but yeah, you can't argue with the numbers for sure.
It's the next tea room episode, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Top seven fast bowlers. Yes. Well, I've got a lot to say about this. Very quickly, just thinking about the entitlement question. Yeah, I really don't have a problem with Broad saying that, because I can understand why he felt that way, because he'd been the leading wicket taker in the last couple of series. He was probably bowling as well as he ever had. So that's much more reasonable to me. Where I did get annoyed was when Johnny Bairstow was left out and was like utterly baffled and angry that because he felt entitled to the shirt when he'd actually not been performing for a long time. Anyway, yes, on the 500 wickets point, you know, I was going to ask, you know, I know I always say this, but do you feel it was slightly overdone, the discussion of it, in that it was like, it's the thing that people were talking about rather than England winning the game? I mean, were you excited when did you punch the air when he got
not
to
really,
the mark?
No, I mean, yeah.
Are we a bit too obsessed with those kind of stats?
Again, I think it's, you know, enjoy it and move on, isn't it? That's... give it a bit of time. And it's a good opportunity obviously it's a fitting opportunity to kind of place Broad in the, you know, in the list
in the
of all-time greats. But yeah, I agree. It's a somewhat meaningless, arbitrary sort of figure to get to, isn't it? Like, why is that any more significant than... But then that's what cricket is all about, to some extent. Like, why is getting to 100 better than getting to 99?
Well, not just better, but yeah, why is getting out on 99 absolutely devastating?
Yeah, exactly.
And getting out on 100, you walk off relatively pleased. And I sort of go back and forth on this, because it does frustrate me that that's what the chat is. England winning the game is of much less significance, seemingly, than Broad getting to 500 wickets. But on the other hand, in 15 years' time, 20 years' time, we won't remember what happened in this game. Yeah, everyone will forget every match, like pretty much every test match, you know, that has ever happened, with only a few exceptions. Whereas you do know the stats, you know that Stuart Broad is in that 500 club, that, you know, so. But then sort of realizing that that's the case makes me wonder whether this is all just all pointless exercise. Like, why are we bothering if it's all just a kind of
an exercising numbers? No, I agree. Well, like, yeah, I do agree on that.
Glorified Pokemon.
There's an element of that. And you know, people... Well, you know, there was a lot of chat with about Roach getting to 200. And you know, people will say a player will come in or whatever, and then they'll be like, well, yeah, he's going to go on and get 300 test wickets or 400 or whatever. And now people are saying, well, why does he, you know, he should be looking to go on and get 600, 700, whatever. Yeah, it does feel at times where it's just an exercise in trying to measure up to numbers that don't really exist or matter.
Don't really mean anything in the end. I mean, the Roach thing was interesting only in that I didn't realise that no West Indies bowler had got to 200 wickets since Curtly Ambrose in 1995, was it? I think it was 25 years since the last one. I mean,
that is significant.
That is quite remarkable, because 200, while it's an impressive achievement, it, you know, is a sort of relatively gettable number, isn't it? And 500 is obviously a very big number, and it is a number that not many have got to. And, you know, it was a huge deal when Walsh became the first one, and because he was that was the world record at the time. And it's only Walsh, McGrath, Anderson and Broad that have done it amongst fast bowlers. I'm definitely not trying to play it down at all. It just, but to me, it's like, it's no more than a kind of interesting side note rather than the main story of the game. And as you say, I just don't know that it's the right measure, or like, what does it really mean, in the sense that, and this is not to denigrate his achievements at all, but it's just undeniably true that the reason Broad has been able to get to 500 is because he plays for England in this era. He's played 140 plus test matches. Had he played 30 years ago, or if he was playing for New Zealand or West Indies or Sri Lanka now, he would get nowhere near that many test matches and would therefore get nowhere near 500 wickets. So sort of number of wickets isn't really the best measure of greatness, is it? Now, you can say there's greatness in the fact that he has played that many games, because he's been consistently good enough throughout that time to keep his place in the team for that long. The fact that he's still going, still got the hunger, the desire, at age 34 is probably bowling as well as he ever has, that is really extraordinary. But you know, he's now got roughly twice as many wickets as Michael Holding and Joel Garner, or put it another way, he's got as many wickets as they got collectively. Is he twice as good a bowler as either of those? So, yeah, but as you say, it's, I suppose maybe the reason people are talking about it so much is because it does just give an opportunity to reflect on Broad, the cricketer, and his career.
Yeah, that's the thing. You wouldn't put Broad, you know, in the, I don't know, well, but yeah, we'll save it for the tea room.
In the top seven.
you wouldn't, but he's obviously, you know, the fact that he's been around for such a long time now, played so many tests, taken so many wickets, been a, you know, a character in that England team for sure. He will go down as a kind of titan of England cricket, definitely. And whilst his numbers overall might not be that impressive in terms of kind of average and you know, comparatively strike rate, yeah, with, you know, with some of the best in the business, he still has had, well, he's had some unbelievable spells, hasn't he? And, you know, throughout his career, you know, notably against Australia, those moments of inspiration as well, I think, elevate him somewhat as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. In some respects, he might be remembered longer or even more fondly than Anderson, because Anderson has been incredibly consistent all the way through, but hasn't maybe had, well, certainly hasn't had as many moments as Broad in terms of match-winning, series-winning spells. Those magic afternoons, as you say, against Australia several times. He's won Ashes series in a spell. He's done it famously in South Africa, and, you know, it happens a lot, doesn't it? Well, in fact, there's a really good article about his stats on Crick Info. There's lots of good little nuggets in there. But
there's lots of good articles on Crick Info.
There's lots of good nuggets in there, but one that really leapt out at me. Yeah, he took 6 for 31 in the first innings of this test, and that's the fourth time that he's taken 6 wickets or more for less than 35 runs. Shane Warne, the only other bowler to have done that in this time. So it does, yeah, it does illustrate that he has a real habit of just destroying teams.
When he's on, he's on.
Yeah. And also, you know, so maybe it is good that we've had this chat, because another thing that I didn't realise about Broad, it kind of maybe goes to show that he actually wasn't that good at the start of his career. He wasn't that effective at the start of his career. I mean, he was fine, but he wasn't.
We moaned about him for years for bowling too short.
Yeah.
And he used to bowl back of a length just constantly, and yeah, wasn't troubling anything. And yeah, and you're about to give us the stat, I'm sure.
Well, the stat is that, like, his bowling average is just coming down and down and down. The curve is going down, and that, so for, he's played, as I say, 140 or so tests. The first 50 tests, his bowling average was 32. It's now 28. So his average since those first 50 tests in 90 plus tests is 25. So actually, had those first 50 tests, obviously this doesn't make sense because presumably he's got better with the experience and stuff, but if had those first 50 tests not happened and he just came in now, you'd be looking at a guy who'd played 90 tests with an average of 25, and then we maybe would be talking about one of the truly great bowlers, at least of this era. So it is noteworthy.
Especially that,
that's the way
is,
it's going, the direction of travel. He's getting better at age 34.
What we're saying is, it's a huge achievement to get the 500 wickets. He's definitely one of the best seven of all time.
That's exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
That's what we said out at the start, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on then, we'll wrap up in a bit. But just to finish then on this series, how do you feel about it overall? We were expecting quite a weird series. Did it feel that weird? I mean, how do you feel, Tone, about biosecure cricket, having now seen a whole series of it?
No.
Does it work?
Well, it does, yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the background, isn't there? I mean, in terms of how enjoyable the series was and what it brought to cricket fans, I think, yeah, that's been a huge success, hasn't it?
Tony's leaning back now. You look very, very relaxed.
Yeah,
there.
Just like really getting into this. No, it's been a huge success, and bar the little blip with Archer and a sort of minor bit of controversy, I don't know, it seems to have gone pretty well.
Well, I completely agree. It's gone so much better than, you know, than I think anyone could have imagined. Certainly in April or May, the idea that we would have played 3 tests so, you know, they'd all gone so smoothly just seemed absurd. The only thing I would say is, you know, I don't think anyone involved is getting complacent, but you just wonder whether people now just think, biosecure cricket, easy, in the sense that it's not guaranteed to to keep being so smooth? You know, yeah. What happens if there's a positive test at some point? It's still a very fragile situation. So, yeah, it's sort of worth remembering that and just enjoying what we've got while we've got it, because it may not last forever.
Exactly. And the way the situation in England has changed just in the time of the test series as well, it's a different picture, isn't it, than it was when we headed into the series. So, you know, who knows? The challenges over the next few weeks might be greater, and yeah, there might be a blip, and that they'll have to work out what happens when it happens. But yeah, I mean, but overall, I think it's been just kind of fantastic cricket, hasn't it? And you know, we maybe slightly downplayed Broad's 500 wickets just before, but you know, things like that, it has been a perfect distraction from everything else.
That's
been going
true.
On.
Yeah, that is true. Maybe I should be a bit more upbeat,
a bit
more generous about the 500 wickets thing, because that's what I wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be able to talk about things like that.
Well, I want to be able to moan about stuff. There's been lots to enjoy, hasn't there? And kind of all credit to everyone involved, and as you said before, to the West Indies for making it happen.
One very last just stray observation. How good is Carlos Brathwaite on Test Match Special?
He was excellent. Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Like, just one of the highlights of the whole thing, I think.
Yeah, Brathwaite will always, obviously in English cricket, kind of folklore will go down for that World T20 final performance. So it's quite nice to, you know, I suppose it was galling at the time, but it wasn't like sort of, I don't know, Ricky Ponting did it to England. But it's a nice kind of, it's nice that he's been welcomed into the fold.
Did you see, it just made me think, talking about Broad's 500 wickets, did you see Yuvraj Singh tweeted out? Did you see this?
No.
It just, like the way he phrased it, it's just a work of genius, really, because he said, look, I know that whenever anyone mentions Stuart Broad, whenever of you guys, latest followers, whenever you mention Stuart Broad to me, all you want to talk about is six sixes. But I say, forget about that. He's a great bowler.
Yeah.
It's like how to talk about the six sixes while at the same time.
It's a Richard Keys-esque kind of... Yeah,
it made me laugh. Okay, well, so yes, that series is done, but don't be thinking, Tone, that you're off the hook in terms of recording podcasts over the next few weeks, because the cricket just doesn't stop at the moment. Another test series about to start. Pakistan are in the UK, have been for quite some time, and the test series and their test series with England kicks off on Thursday, this coming Thursday, the, what is that, 5th of August? 6th of August? You tell me. In fact, does it even start on Thursday, or have I got that wrong?
Well, Thursday is the 6th, so you've got that right.
Genius.
Yeah, you're doing well.
I know. I know it's not even Thursday.
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday the 5th of August is when it starts. So this is going well. Need to get a calendar. So yeah, more Test cricket to look forward to. I think in some ways it's not, like, in terms of how this is going to go on the field, not necessarily entirely dissimilar to the framing of the West Indies series, in that Pakistan are also not to the same extent, but somewhat lopsided, if you like, team, in that, you know, they've got a very strong bowling attack, but potentially fragile batting lineup as well. But definitely a stronger batting lineup than West Indies have. Yes, you know, there may be some fragility kind of around these players, but in Azhar Ali, the captain, Asad Shafiq and Babar Azam, they have got some real quality in the middle order. So, well, you're a big Babar Azam fan, Tony.
Yeah, this could be an exciting series. And you mentioned, like, you know, the bowling attack that Pakistan potentially will field is probably better than the West Indies bowling attack.
Wow. I feel like every team we talk about, yeah, like, they've probably got the best bowling attack in the world. But it's a big shout, but it's not necessarily wrong.
I don't know. Cheers, mate. No, it could be exciting.
It's not necessarily absolutely f***ing moronic.
Yeah, it's somewhere between right and wrong.
Well, so who are we talking about? Mohammed Abbas?
Yeah.
Shaheen Afridi, young Tyro.
But yeah, Nazim Shah, the youngster. He took that brilliant hat-trick, didn't he? Can't remember who against.
We're both lying down there, lounging on one elbow.
But yeah, no, I think it'd be it's an exciting prospect for sure.
Well, Mohammed Abbas in England 2 years ago was absolutely phenomenal. Or yeah, it was earlier in the summer. Ball maybe swinging more than it might do this week, but he's a phenomenal cricketer with a phenomenal record. yeah, it's definitely an exciting prospect watching that bowling attack. And then you just feel, unlike West Indies, that they have got the batting to back that up, albeit, you know, England will feel if they get a couple of them out early that they're well on top. But I am looking forward to watching Babar Azam bat. He's just a really gorgeous player to watch. Must be one of the most sort of aesthetically pleasing batsmen around at the moment. I guess the only thing, as we said before the start of the West Indies series, it's slightly hard to know what to expect from them, in that they've not played any cricket at all for a long time. England now, you know, with overs, with games under their belt, you know, will certainly feel confident coming in. But I think, yeah, it's an exciting prospect.
Yeah, perhaps we'll do our predictions after the first test.
Well, no, Tane. I was going to ask you now for a prediction. Pakistan haven't lost a series in England for 10 years. Now, they've only played two series in that time, in 2016 when it was a draw, and then 2 years ago just a two-match series, also a draw. But yeah, they sort of emerged with a lot of credit from both of those. What do you think this time? Three tests?
I'm going to go 2-1 England.
It's boring.
Is that where you were going to go?
Boring. Do you know what? It's really difficult to predict a drawn test match these days, isn't it? Because it almost never happens. But I might go 1-1. I'm backing the rain to come in at some point.
Come on, the rain.
Maybe we'll have a draw somewhere along the line. And yeah, I can see a drawn series.
It's going to be good.
All right, well, that's probably your lot for the World Cricket Show this time. Have you enjoyed this one, Tane? On
very
on
pleasant.
Bordeaux.
Yeah, I've actually got a photo of you, which I need to get.
I need to get a photo of you this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, true. No, you don't get a photo of me.
Do you want to do the plugs? Do you want to do the wrap up, and I'll get a photo of you?
I can't remember. No, you do the plugs and take the photo. Go on then.
Well, yeah, I'll get a little snap of you for the old social med.
I've got the little retro camera.
Ooh, what on earth is this? What is this app?
You need to get the sea in the background.
Yeah. Right? Hang on. Well, I've got to take my headphones off.
Oh. Just getting into position.
Just getting comfortable there, are you?
Yeah. Where are you going?
Well, which way? I need to go like up here.
Yeah. You need to get low.
Yeah.
Try not
low
to.
Battery. Low power mode?
No, just go for it. No.
No low power.
Just whiff it out. I don't know if this is the most flattering angle.
It's definitely not.
And I'll just try and look a bit more smart casual. Real little photo shoot here. Right, come on, let's get this wrapped, otherwise I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, let's wrap it up then. Well, yeah, it's been another good one on the beach. Another beach next time.
Yeah.
What are we thinking next time?
Beach tour continues. Herm, I think, next.
Well, you said that last time. I mean, Herm looks pretty close right now, doesn't it? Maybe we could commandeer a little skiff or something and record on the way over.
Yeah, I'd like that. Maybe we do a wrap up of the summer in Herm, actually. That's probably quite a good shout.
That's probably quite a good shout.
Probably
by
good
me.
Shout for myself.
Yeah, do it on the boat. Do you remember when we were in Sark that time and you got chatting to some guy who told you that he had a boat and did little island tours or whatever? And you were like, oh, that sounds amazing. Could we go tomorrow? And he was like, yeah, absolutely, free tomorrow. And you're like, brilliant, yeah, we'll get out on the boat, take some food, a few beers. And he went, there's no drinking on my boat. You're like, oh, right.
Yeah, really killed the buzz.
There's absolutely no drinking on my boat. And we didn't go on the boat. All right, Tane, that's it, I think. We'll be back next week to review the first Pakistan test. But between now and then, if you enjoy the World Cricket Show, get more involved on our social media, on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. I'm sure you'll find us. You can send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com, and do leave us a rating and a review on wherever you're listening to the podcast, because that does really help to bring new people to the show. I've sort of compressed the plugs a bit, Tony.
Yeah, so that, yeah, good.
Speed it up. No one wants to hear me drone on and on about.
Exactly. Just the key
now,
facts.
Write this down. Now, Instagram, it's at World Cricket Show. That's WORLD.
Just get it done.
Get the plugs done. This is really topical, topical satire of get Brexit done.
Yeah, true.
Do you remember Brexit?
Those are the days. Nostalgic.
All right. Well, stay in school, everyone. Stay safe wherever you are out there in the big wide world, and we will be back soon. Cheers, Tane.
Cheers.
Bye bye for now.
I can smell your fear. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.